And now I have the pleasure of bringing on Michael Pearson. He's the president of DSA Technologies. Michael, tell us about entrepreneurship. I mean, how did you get into this crazy game?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways I'm an accidental entrepreneur.
Okay.
It's one of those things where even when I was young, I was always hustling and grew up poor, trying to find a job, trying to find a way to make money. And at some point just realized that's what I was doing. I didn't necessarily want to work for anyone. When I worked for the founder of DSA Technologies, it was one of those things where he gave me freedom to do whatever I wanted. And that's the same type of manager I am to my staff, which makes me not necessarily a great manager for a lot of people. But it's accidentally ran into it and just love doing it.
Well, I want to go back to the early days in a minute, but let's find out what DSA Technologies is all about. You guys support the entrepreneurial community in such a big way. You're helping me with my efforts here and the Mark Haney Show. But we want to know what DSA is all about, and then maybe we can kind of get into how you got into the game.
Right. So DSA Technologies is a full-service IT provider. So our goal is to provide outsourced IT services or data center services to our clients. We've been around 27 years and still work with our very first client from 27 years ago. So we want long-term relationships. And I guess in some ways our goal is allowing people to be entrepreneurial and not have to worry about the technology. If you're an architect, if you're an engineer, if you're a home builder, whatever you're doing, you don't want to worry about IT. We step in and take the place of that. You do that with some of your businesses as well.
Yes. So outsourcing. So you come in, do they fire their IT guy and hire you? How does that work when you go into a company and say, hey, look, you might want to consider outsourcing?
Right. It works out in two different ways, right? There's people that they may have wanted to get rid of and didn't know how. And there's others that we tell them that's a perfectly good employee, but we realize that they don't have a future here. If you're an IT guy at an architecture firm, you're not going to get a seat at the table. We're a technology company. You can grow with us. You can have a career with us that you can't have somewhere else.
Okay, so you're developing IT people in your business. And I see that a lot. I see sort of a trend there. I don't know if you would agree with this, but I sort of see a trend with outsourcing. We see it in accounting, right, in bookkeeping,
right,
stuff we do, marketing. Do you think that's a trend that entrepreneurs are facing, where it's like it's much easier to stay focused if we outsource?
Right, absolutely. I think if you can focus on your key business, again, whatever that happens to be, rather than on the administrative tasks related to that business, you're going to accelerate, right? That's the whole point of incubators and everything else, is how do you pour gasoline on the fire, get rid of all the nonsense, and just let people drive their business? We take away some of that nonsense.
And I'm thinking maybe it de-risks the IT situation a little bit to bring on experts, top-line teams, versus I got my brother-in-law kind of taking care of my IT stuff. He may not have the chops. He may not be certified. You in this situation, you have studs, right? Men and women.
Right. So we have 45 staff. I think the important thing for us is we see it across a variety of clients and similar clients. So when we're talking to a construction company, we have other construction company clients. We have other architecture clients. So we can share information. And then we're using best practices that work across all of those so that they don't have to worry about, do we know what we're doing? Absolutely know what we're doing. And we can show them the experience and give them the examples.
Well, thinking about the biggest concerns that we have as business people, security, you know, cybersecurity is a big issue. All the speed that technology is changing. I mean, what are the big things that you have to stay up on that are trending?
Yeah, so security is one of the biggest ones. We're seeing new variants of viruses and malware all the time. That's a big deal for us. We have a great security guy on our team. The other piece of it is making sure clients have disaster recovery in place. If something happened, could your business keep going? And we go to extreme lengths to make that happen. We had a client when there was a fire out in the Fairfield area, and one of our guys happened to be out there. They called us up. The office was shutting down because there was a fire. Our guys drove over there. They didn't want disaster recovery before that. Our guys go over there, pick up their gear, drop it in our data center. They never left our data center. We provide them disaster recovery long term now. And you know what didn't seem like it was important before, it's important when the fire's at your front door.
Yeah, solving major problems, handling emergency situations. Okay, I want to get back into the entrepreneurial journey. Now let's get to the juicy stuff. So when did you know, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur? And I'm kind of wondering, you think you came out of the womb that way? Is it nature or is it nurture?
You know, I think there's some certain traits that we're inherently given that tend to draw us toward entrepreneurship. I'm a big fan of strength finders, and I have a couple, some of my strengths are very unique. And even from an early age, I just wanted to do things my own way. I wanted to earn money, and I wasn't afraid to go out and do that. I would go to a fast food. At that time, it was like a Dorener schnitzel, and I'd go there, and I'd tell them, you know what? Your facilities look horrible. There's a bunch of weeds and stuff here. I'm going to come and clean up your facility. Would you pay me? And I was probably 12 or 13 years old when I was doing that sort of thing.
Well, where did the ambition come from? Where did that thirst come from?
I think being poor is a part of it. No one's giving you the money, so we grew up poor. So you want to earn money. You want to feel like you're accomplishing something. So I think that was a big part of it. And then I think as I grew older, it's just wanting to make a difference. That's the other big thing. And the way that we do that from an IT perspective is IT has had a bad reputation in some cases of, gosh, we don't know what those guys do. Are they really helping us? And we want to open up that black box and say, you know what? IT is just another department. It adds value to your business if it's done well. And we want to expose that and make a difference for it.
Do you think there's some people that just shouldn't jump into entrepreneurship?
If you're going to work 8 to 5, or you think you only want to work 8 to 5, you shouldn't jump into entrepreneurship, because it's gonna suck the life out of you. It's not what you want to do. If you need stability, if you cower at change, if you're not willing to take risks, monetary and time, you're not an entrepreneur. Don't do it.
What's the biggest risk you've taken?
Oh, gee. I think the biggest risk I took was in 2003 when I acquired DSA from the other two partners we had. And at that time, it was the bottom of the dot-com bubble. It wasn't a lot going on. And to be able to take that risk and say, gosh, I'm going to start with, at that point, we had 5 people, and say, I'm going to launch this, and I'm going to be fully responsible for it, and try to make sure that we can do well. We had a year where we grew 64%. We went from 5 people to 47. Hiring all those people, I feel personally responsible for those families. So that's probably the biggest risk, is whenever we hire new people, I feel like I'm responsible, and we need to make sure we do it right.
I think there's a part of most people who aren't entrepreneurs who don't understand that mindset, how you feel about your teammates, especially when they've done so much for you. But I'm also thinking that a lot of people don't understand other components of it too, like the part of, you're a family man, you've got 5 kids. Right. Like, what else does the average person not realize about entrepreneurship? It's not quite as glamorous all the time as people might think.
Right. And I think for those of us that have a family and you want to do it all, I want to be a great father, I want to be a good husband, I don't miss baseball games, I don't miss football games, that means you sleep less. You cut your day short to maybe go catch a game. You might take a call at the game. You're going to do more email and stuff after the game, and you're not going to sleep as much. You're going to wake up early because that maybe the kids are asleep or your wife's asleep, and you're just going to put in the time to make all of that happen. So for me, I don't see it as a can you do one or the other. Just do it all and realize you're going to have to put in the time to make that happen.
I've heard people say you need to compartmentalize, so you got to shut it off at some point. Is that something that you've played around with at all?
So I don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't compartmentalize when it comes to my family. I don't compartmentalize when it comes to my faith. I don't compartmentalize when it comes to my business. So from an integrity standpoint, from a faith standpoint, we're very careful about doing the right things the right way. People have to be able to trust us, and we have to build those relationships. I have to care about my clients' families. Am I putting my clients' business at risk by not doing the right things for them? That could impact their family and their employees' families. So I don't compartmentalize. I think it's all one holistic piece, and you just live it that way.
Interesting that you brought up your client's family. I don't think I've ever heard anybody express it that way. Like, what? Describe that. Elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah. So when we're talking with our clients, and you're talking about a DR situation, if it's a small company, one of the things that we're sharing with them is the risk that they're taking of not having their company function because their technology isn't working. And sometimes, you know, different types of business leaders may be comparing that to the cost of buying a boat. I could put in my new data center, but, you know, I was really thinking about this boat. I'm trying to explain to them that, yes, but that new data center can make sure you can have that boat a lot longer later
on. Let's think about your family here for a second.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, and I have to be a little bit careful with that, right, because I can't make that decision for them, but I need to give them all the facts so that they can make a proper decision.
So I'm kind of known as the guy that likes to dream really big. Do you have a vision for DSA at this stage?
Yeah, I think for us, I think we're in a little bit of a transition where we've been around 27 years. I think we are operationally extremely sound. We focused operationally on being very successful, great operations, have a great management team. And I think now we're ready to jump to that next level where we're looking at, in all honesty, probably, you know, tripling or better in size in the next 5 years.
What kind of opportunity does that create for the people that work at DSA?
Yeah, I think it creates a great opportunity for them in terms of growing their career. I think as we expand further through California, Arizona, Nevada primarily, a great opportunity if they want to live somewhere else and still work for us. In our industry, though, that's very open, right? We have people in Nevada that work for us that we don't have any clients in that area where they work, but because we're technology, they can work remotely, and we have the facilities to allow them to do that.
Yeah. Well, thinking about helping the entrepreneurs out there, there are people listening that are thinking about getting on into entrepreneurship. There are people that are in it, and they don't know whether they should stay in it because they're struggling. I hear from struggling people all the time. Give us some words of wisdom or your thoughts, your private thoughts or personal thoughts on entrepreneurs. What's it? What is it like to be an entrepreneur, and maybe just some advice to the next one in line?
Yeah, so we're, even with our own firm, we're always looking at new opportunities. On top of that, we encourage our staff to bring new opportunities to us. And one of the first things I tell any entrepreneur is, no matter what the idea is, I say, great, set a runway for yourself and tell me what that runway looks like. And at the end of that runway, you're either in flight or you're stopping because that's the end of the runway. And a lot of people, if they can't think that through and they can't understand what that looks like, I caution them about moving forward, because you have to know what my end game is, what success starts to look like, so that I know, am I launching off the runway or am I just, I'm going to have to hit the brake. This isn't working. Doesn't mean that you're not an entrepreneur. It means like that may not have been the right idea for you and you need to find something else. So that's one thing that I really focus on with them is understand your runway. Mm-hmm. Is that 6 month? Is it 3 month? What is it that you're giving yourself? What are you funded for? What are you willing to sacrifice for? And then at the end of that, stay to it.
Do you think there's kind of a trend toward accepting failure more so today, quitting? And we all know that you need to test things out, but you go out there and you raise money and you sink it into something and it just doesn't work. And, well, failure happens, and then maybe that's more okay today than it used to be?
So I want to separate failure from quitting, right? Because quitting isn't something I'm into. I'm not into quitting. And failure is perfectly okay. And we allow that with our staff. We have staff that will want to take a new role, and we allow them to succeed or fail in that role and give them an opportunity to go back. We've had staff that have left our company, and I've told them, if that role doesn't work, test it. If it fails, come back. We'll take you back. And I think that's part of letting people learn and grow. So we have to be able to do that. Quitting, though, isn't an option. That's not good. We don't like quitting.
Quitting is never an option, but failure is okay. That's how we grow.
Right. And I think a lot of people talk about fail fast. That's a real Silicon Valley thing. Fail fast. I think that's good in a lot of ways. You know, if you're going to fail, you might as well fail fast. Figure it out in a hurry, and then let's move on to the next thing.
All right. Any other closing thoughts, Michael, as we talk to the entrepreneurs of Sacramento?
No, I think the other thing I would encourage entrepreneurs is to give back. That's real important for me. I just recently got involved with a group called Improve Your Tomorrow. It's a young men's group, and they're trying to send men to college. And I think if we can give back with what we've learned entrepreneurially, with our finances, and we can create future entrepreneurs that aren't dependent on regular jobs or the government or anything else. They can make a living on their own. I'm very much into that. So anything I can do to help with that, I'm interested, and I encourage entrepreneurs around the world to do that same sort of thing.
And I know you are very generous with Allegiant Giving, the charitable organization we founded. You're so helpful in helping us spread the entrepreneurial message out to the region. Michael, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for what you do.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on.
You bet.
Can you hear the drum?